You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I shouldn't think stuff like this. They're saying
something is wrong with me.
How did you get to be so cynical?
Practice.
Welcome to another episode of Positive Cynicism. I am your host, Chad Smart. You can find me on Twitter, at Chad Smart. It's very simple. I am curious to hear your views and opinions on things that we talk about here on the show. So, you know, I get lonely sometimes at night when I cry myself to sleep. So hit me up on Twitter and let me know what you think of the show or ideas you have for the show, even if the idea is cancel the show. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. We're going to start this week off. Before we get into the meat of the topic, I just want to give some shout-outs to some podcasts that I have started listening to over the last month or so, a couple of months. You know, when I'm sitting at work and just trying to pass the time, I'll throw on a podcast, and a lot of them help me pass my day, which can be very kind of slow and uninteresting as I'm sitting reading email after email for 8 hours. So first I want to start off with Podzilla 1985. This is a group of guys and girls out of Cape Girardeau, Missouri. And I just stumbled upon them randomly one day and did not know that they were from Missouri. And when I was listening and they started talking about being from Cape, it was interesting because before moving to Los Angeles, I was living in Southern Illinois and was about an hour away from Cape Girardeau. So knowing where Cape is and everything, it was just interesting hearing a podcast emanating from Cape Girardeau. And I mentioned them first, other than the fact that they have I think 5 different shows that they do during the week. There's Nerd Up, which is all about video games and comic books. Podzilla After Dark, which is a more just kind of loose, whatever they feel like talking about show. There's Mr. 100 and the 5-Star Man, which are the two main Podzilla contributors. And I'm blanking on one of the other shows, but the show that got me into them initially was the Pro Wrestling Unscripted show. And two of the guys from that show, the 5-Star Man, Asa Gray, and Dalton Anthony, are actually on this week's episode of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. I had introduced Kevin Huntsberger, the host of My 1-2-3 Cents, to the Podzilla podcast, and they are big fans of the wrestling promotion Stride Pro Wrestling that Kevin is involved with back in Southern Illinois. So, and the Podzilla guys are big fans and travel to the show. So I told Kevin that he should, you know, try to cross promote and talk to them, and he actually listened to me for a change. So it's a really interesting conversation if you want to listen to two grown men talk about collecting wrestling figures. No, seriously, it is a good interview on My 1-2-3 Cents. I encourage you to check it out. And also, check out the Podzilla 1985 slate of shows. Another one that I listen to is Stuck in the 80s. Anyone that knows me knows I am a child of the 80s. I pretty much think the 80s are the greatest generation ever, and listening to two or three guys talk about things from the 80s is right up my alley. And they actually do an 80s cruise every year. They have one coming up next year with Rick Springfield being the main attraction and a whole host of other 80s musical acts and celebrities. I believe the original MTV VJs will be on board as well. So if you're looking for a cruise next year, check out Stuck in the 80s Cruise. And then the last podcast, one that I just discovered probably about 3 weeks ago, is called Tom and Jim's Top 5. And the show is so simple in its concept that when I started listening to it, I really started kicking myself for spending 6 months trying to come up with the idea for my podcast. This show is basically two guys, Tom and Jim, giving their top five on various topics of the week. Recent episodes include top five board games, top five classic Nintendo games, top five cartoons, I believe. It's a very simplistic show, but the two hosts, Tom and Jim, are very... Well, I think Tom is very animated and makes the show lively. Jim is more the straight man. And they just play well off of each other. I think they have a good dynamic. And Tom actually has another show that he does with his brother, which is a wrestling-themed show called Bone Crusher. I think it's Skull Crusher Wrestling. Sorry, Tom, if you're listening. I really should have taken down notes. So it's another one that I've introduced Kevin to and have said, you know, maybe try to do a cross-promotion at some point in time and do a top five wrestling theme episode. My only problem with Tom and Jim's show is I live by two rules. And one is I don't trust anybody who doesn't think the 80s is the greatest generation or the greatest decade, as I previously said. And Jim seems to be not fully on board with that line of thinking. So sometimes he'll make a few comments that I find questionable, but it's still a good show. My second rule of life that I try to adhere to is never trust a white person with dreadlocks. And I say this as a white person who had dreadlocks for about 6 hours one day. So I speak with some authority on the subject. But speaking of white guys with dreadlocks, segue into today's show. Last week, I had the opportunity to go see the Counting Crows Matchbox 20 concert at the Fabulous Forum here in LA. A friend texted me during the afternoon saying that she had a free ticket, an extra ticket, and wanted to know if I wanted to go. I had no plans, so I said, sure, why not? Counting Crows and Matchbox 20 are two bands that I never really listened to before going to the show. And during the day, I listened to the Counting Crows' greatest hits to try to familiarize myself with some of their music other than Mr. Jones. And I actually enjoyed the Greatest Hits album, and so I looked forward to it. Their show, though, while musically very well done and entertaining, if the lead singer... Well, my first thought was, man, I wonder if the lead singer of Counting Crows hates the fact that he can never have another hairstyle other than dreadlocks, because that's all anyone knows him as. And my other thought was, if he wasn't walking around the stage, and I mean walking, just kind of meandering around the stage during the songs, this would be the dullest concert that I have ever seen. That's not to take away from the music aspect. It just... I turned to my friend about halfway through their show and said, this is a college bar band that never learned how to play bigger venues. And that actually tied into a thought that I'd had a few days earlier, because 4 days earlier at the same venue, I saw Garth Brooks, and Garth owned that arena. Just like he'd own the Honda Center in Anaheim when I saw him back in November, and just as he had owned the Southern Illinois University Arena back in October of 96 when I saw him there. And after seeing the show a couple weeks ago at the Forum, it made me wonder, and think about who are the performers that I have seen that just own the stage while they are performing. So as I thought about it, I came up with three names that I wanted to talk about. And these aren't necessarily my three favorite artists. Well, actually, one is currently my favorite artist. But it's just three performers that I have seen multiple times and would go see them probably every time they came around. Just because, not so much in the case of my top artist, it's not even because I'm a huge fan, it's just because they put on such a great performance and they own, as I said earlier, they own the stage once they step foot on it. So we might as well start with Garth Brooks. As I mentioned, I've seen him, this was the fourth time that I had seen him in the last 20 years. And other than being maybe a little grayer in the hair, I couldn't tell you a difference between seeing him in 96 and seeing him in 2017. He had the same amount of energy running around the stage, and just the way that he interacts with the audience. Very few performers, I think, are comparable to him. From the moment the lights go down in the arena until Garth steps off the arena, the entire crowd is captivated by his presence. And one thing that I think is very important as well to mention, and I mentioned this on a few episodes back when I talked about seeing New Kids on the Block, is you can tell that Garth is having fun on stage, and that resonates through the crowd. But it's also, like I said, the way he interacts with the crowd, the way he will point at people and mention people in the crowd while he's performing, that just has this bond, but it also holds people into he just has a captivating attraction on the crowd that he is performing for. And I have to give a shout out to Garth for just being, I believe, and I've never personally met the guy, I don't, you know, but everything that I have seen with him is he seems to be a genuinely good person. And I remember back in 96, being in college, when he came and performed at SIU. At the time, I was producing a country music video show for our local student access TV station. And so we got to go to his press conference. And I tell anybody who I talk to about Garth Brooks, I say either he is the greatest actor that you will ever see, or he is the most humble person that you will ever meet. Because in that press conference, anytime someone tried to give him a compliment, he would accept it, but then deflect and try to not put the accolades on him, on himself. And I saw that at the concert at the Forum, where during his encore, people bring signs with names of songs, either his songs or other artists' songs, and he will just go through and randomly pick out signs and play that song. Someone had a sign that said Lonesome Dove, and he looked at it and it's like, okay, you're holding up the sign that says Lonesome Dove, but you're pointing to the person next to you. And then he's like, what's that about? And the person next to this woman holding the sign held up another sign that said, you helped me get through four deployments to Afghanistan. I think it said Afghanistan. I know it definitely said got me through four deployments. And so at that point, as soon as people saw the sign, the entire arena erupted into applause. And Garth just looked and said, that's for you. This is all for you. We thank you. I thank you, you know, for fighting for our country. And then he played the song. And afterwards, he looked at the girl again and said, you know, I didn't get you through 4 deployments. You know what got you through that. God, your strength, your family, your friends. Whereas I think most other performers would have just said, oh, thank you. I'm glad I could have been a part of that. I think Garth was appreciative of the sentiment, but wanted the girl to know that it wasn't him. It was more about her being than him. And I don't know, there's just something about that that resonates, I think, with the rest of the audience. Because I always say, when you see somebody doing good, you root more for their success. But getting back on topic, Garth just his energy captivates people. And I think he played for 3 hours that night. I think he could have played for another 3 easily and still had the crowd in the palm of his hands the entire time. The second artist that I want to mention is my favorite artist performing today. And this is a guy who I will go and see every time he comes that I have the opportunity to. I saw him last year when he was on tour for his latest album. He's performing. He has a benefit show coming up in September that I have tickets for. And it's a guy that, unfortunately, when I say his name, people listening probably don't know him that well. But I'm sure that you know his songs that he has written or produced, because he is a big time producer and writer. And that man is Butch Walker. I missed like the first 10, 12 years of Butch's career. He first came to, you can say, fame in the late 80s, early 90s as the guitar player for, well, for lack of a better term, for a hair metal band straight off the Sunset Strip called South Gang. I believe they put out 2 albums, I want to say in 90 and 91, maybe 91, 92. Unfortunately, they came out right as the hair metal scene was dying and grunge was taking off. So I think they had a little bit of success, like 1 or 2 songs in rotation on MTV, but not the type of success that probably had they come out 4 or 5 years earlier that they could have had. After South Gang failed to make much of an impact, some things went down with the band. I'm not sure of all the details, but they ousted the lead singer, became a 3-man band with Butch taking over the vocal duties, and called themselves the Marvelous 3. And they had some minor success as well during the 90s. I believe their hit song, or their biggest hit, was a song called Freak of the Week. They released 3 albums. And then, as Butch has said in concert, their record label basically said, okay, we're going to keep you under contract, but we're not going to promote you. Is that okay? And the band's like, no. So they ended up breaking up, and Butch went solo. And that's when I discovered him, right after the release of his first album, his first solo album, Left of Self-Centered. And I'm trying to think of how many albums he has released since then. I believe it's at least 7 or 8. Again, really should have looked this up before I started talking. But unfortunately, when I was living in Southern Illinois, the closest Butch would ever come and perform was Chicago. And I really didn't feel like making the 5-hour drive to Chicago every time he would come and play. And he did play St. Louis one time that I remember, when he was opening for Avril Lavigne. And I remember a friend of mine went to the show, and I was like, oh, you get to see Butch, you know, tell me how great he is, whatever. And she came back. Apparently he was doing an autograph session at the merchandise booth. And so she got his autograph for me, and she's like, yeah, I just went up to him and said, I don't know who you are, but my friend is a big fan. So I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but whatever. Having been out here in Los Angeles for the last 10 years, I've had the opportunity to see Butch, I believe five times for full shows, and then a couple other times at the Hotel Cafe's annual Ho-Ho Hotel Cafe benefit shows, where every performer gets about 15 minutes to perform. And, you know, the crowd may be smaller than Garth Brooks or the artist that I will name as the top artist. But even so, Butch can control them with the same enthusiasm, the same power of just owning the building that he is in. And I remember when I saw him a year ago on the tour promoting his latest album, Stay Gold, which I highly recommend checking out if you have not heard it. But he ended the show. The encore was just him and an acoustic guitar playing the song Record Store, which my favorite song on the album. And for being in LA, which kind of my opinion on LA crowds is a lot of times they're not there really to see the show. They're just there to be seen, or they're just there because they just want to go out for the night. And we'll talk more than actually paying attention to the show. But Butch was able to take that crowd and, like I said, him and just an acoustic guitar, and you could hear a pin drop in the venue because the crowd was so fixated on him. And I think that says a lot about his capability to own a crowd. So yes, if you are not familiar with Butch, read up on him, and I'm sure that you will find several songs that you are probably familiar with, probably fan of. He's done a lot of work with Pink, Kelly Clarkson, Avril Lavigne, Taylor Swift, Fall Out Boy. He just produced the album by Suzanne Santo of Honey Honey, who also is another artist you should check out because, well, Honey Honey is a great Americana band. And if you've watched the show The Guest Room on TBS, which premiered recently, they are the Honey Honey is the house band on that show. But Butch is probably one of the best songwriters, in my opinion, out there today. I can't say enough positive about him as a performer or a songwriter. So just check him out. And actually, if you go on YouTube, he did a show with Live Nation at the start of his last tour, and it is still on YouTube. You can watch the whole thing. It's from Atlanta, which is his hometown. And yeah, just check it out. If you don't like it, well, let me know on Twitter, and I will tell you that you are probably wrong, and I probably can't trust your opinions on much on other things as well. Kidding. So I said Butch was my favorite artist going today, but the person that I put as the best performer that I've ever seen live is a person that I can't even really call myself a fan of. I like the music of his that I know I liked, but I think I've owned one album by him, and that was when I was 11 years old, and it just happened to be, like, you know, the biggest album of the year. I think everybody owned it. And that man is He is just a legend in this industry, or in life, really. It's Prince, who unfortunately is no longer with us. But I feel safe in saying that there will never be another being as captivating as Prince is. And I saw him a few years ago, I want to say about 4 or 5 years ago. He did 21 shows around Los Angeles, most of them at the Forum, a couple private, smaller club shows. And I went mainly because the tickets were $25 for the Forum shows. And I will probably see just about anybody for $25. I mean, as I record this, I am debating with friends to go see Corey Feldman for $20. So, you know, $25 to see Prince was a bargain. And as I said, I know the hits. I don't really know beyond that. And even a lot of the hits, I'm not that familiar with. But I went to his first show, and I had never seen anything like it before. My biggest regret from that first show is I was with friends who had to work the next day. And so we left after the first encore. And apparently when Prince would perform, you never left until security kicked you out of the building. Because Prince may come out and do 2 encores, 3 encores, 6 encores. Until he was done playing, even if the lights had come on, he would still come back out and perform. And words escape me to explain, to do justice on how amazing Prince was. And I remember either the second or third show that I saw at the Forum. I remember just watching him be Prince and do his little dance moves, and looked at my friend and said, you know, if you walked into a club and you saw a guy dressed like Prince, wearing 6-inch stiletto heels, doing the stuff that Prince is doing, your initial thought would be, man, what a freak. Look at that guy. Like, but Prince, you're like, damn, look at that. That guy is awesome. And I mean, he had the crowd in the palm of his hand. That just one look would be all it took. He just give a side eye and the crowd would react. And then I saw him at smaller clubs. One show I saw him was just him and his band kind of doing a jazz improvisational, like really no flow, just up there jamming. And again, even without doing songs that people know, people were just in awe of him, other than Kim and Kourtney Kardashian, who were sitting up in the VIP section on their phones the entire time. And then the last time that I saw Prince was at the Palladium, which holds, I believe, about 5,000 people. And there were maybe 3,000 people there because it was a show that was announced day of, something Prince apparently liked to do to, you know, keep scalpers away, is just announce a show a few hours before it happens and let the fans buy the tickets at face value. And I think he went on around 10:30 and played until 2 or 2:30 in the morning. It was just an amazing show. And again, he's just so captivating that, again, I can't I'm failing miserably in my attempt to explain how good he was. And I remember after he passed, one of the theaters out here showed the Sign of the Times concert movie. And friends and I went and saw that. And just even on film, like just watching Prince, like it's so, you caught that essence of him. So if you have a chance to check that out, I highly recommend it. And he's so amazing that a few months ago, I had the opportunity to see The Revolution, which was Prince's band from the late 70s, early 80s. And they, you know, the core band was still intact. And I believe the bass player and Wendy, the guitar player, traded off vocals most of the time. And then they had another guy come out and sing lead vocals on a few of the songs. And he tried, I don't want to say he was trying to be Prince, but he was a very flamboyant, energetic persona. But as good as that show was musically, it showed what made Prince so great. And I was telling friends about the show later, and I said it was like watching a really good cover band, because the band musically was very good, obviously, because they are the original band that had backed Prince, but you just can't replace Prince. A few years ago, I saw Bruce Springsteen, who would probably be like number four on this list, and it was after Clarence Clemens had died, and his son has replaced him in the E Street Band, and he was very good. And I said, yes, you can replace Clarence Clemens. You couldn't replace Bruce Springsteen. And that's how it is with Prince. You can put anybody up there and sing the songs, and even if they are a great singer, no one is going to replace Prince. He just has a persona that is so larger than life that he doesn't just own the stage. He doesn't own the building. When he would perform, he would own the entire city that he was performing in. He was that charismatic, that, as I said, there will never be another performer like Prince. So those are just three of the three performers that I would label as the best performers that I've ever seen live. I'm curious to hear, you know, who would be on your list if you had such a list and wanted to share? Hit me up on Twitter, as I said, at Chad Smart. That's at ChadSmart. Very simple. And I would be curious to hear what other names, because again, this, with the exception of Butch, these are not Prince and Garth. I wouldn't even consider my favorite artist. And I know that there are people who are listening to this who are probably surprised of some of the other performers that I do like that I did not name or even mention. And I'm not going to. We'll save that for another show, possibly. But these are just performers that I feel are the best performers out there. And speaking of performers, due to my laziness in recording this, I did not get it done by my self-imposed deadline, which kind of played, was kind of a good thing, because I get to record this after the news that Glenn Campbell has lost his battle, or I don't know. I saw somebody saying that you shouldn't say lost their battle with Alzheimer's, because that doesn't really reflect the true nature of the disease. But Glenn Campbell has unfortunately passed away. And I just want to take a moment to pay my condolences to his family and friends. As a kid, his song Rhinestone Cowboy was one of the first 45 single albums that I had. And it's also probably the first song that I misinterpreted the lyrics, where instead of singing getting cards and letters from people I don't even know, I would sing getting cars and letters from people I don't know. And I just thought that was the coolest thing and one of the reasons why I wanted to be a Rhinestone Cowboy, because if people were just giving you random cars, that sounds like a great life. But I did have the opportunity to see Glenn Campbell a few years ago when he kicked off his farewell tour, and you could tell at the time that the Alzheimer's was getting to him. He kept, I think, pretty much after every song, he would make the same comment. And there were a couple times where it looked like he wasn't sure what he was doing. But even with that, it was an amazing performance, and one that I am glad that I had the opportunity to see. And I know that there's a documentary that chronicled that tour and the events going on in his life as he and his family dealt with his Alzheimer's diagnosis. The documentary is called Glenn Campbell, I'll Be Me. And if you have a chance to see it, I recommend it. It is entertaining as it is depressing. But it's really well done, and especially now with his passing, I encourage you to give it a look. So from myself, I pay my respects to Glenn Campbell's family. He will be missed, I'm almost certain. Whew. Kind of a heavy note to end the show on. Yeah, we'll be back either next week or in 2 weeks with a new episode. I'm taking auditions for co-host because I really do not like doing solo shows. I'm sure no one wants to listen to me ramble on for as long as I ramble. And I need someone else just to pick up some slack and help steer conversation into conversational tones. So we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks. But like I said, hit me up on Twitter. I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Go over to iTunes, leave a review, and be sure to check out the other shows here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. As I mentioned earlier, you have I can't even say his name. He really should change his name to a more better-sounding professional name. Kevin Hunsberger with the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. Greg Mahochko has Nerds United and the Five Hearts podcast, which we were talking the other day, and the Five Hearts podcast is all about Nebraska sports, University of Nebraska sports. And during the summertime, he said it's been a little slow on content, but with college starting up soon and college football starting up, I'm sure he will have more regular shows on his plate and available to listen to. So check those out. And as always, I encourage you to do something positive and to always question everything.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.